What is one of the key things that you see Mary and Joseph and Jesus doing that would gain them the title of being a holy family? Think about that for a moment. And then start to bring in what were all the different things that Mary and Joseph had to face. First off, when we encounter Joseph in Matthew's gospel, what's the first thing that goes on with him? He and Mary are betrothed to each other, which is basically equal to saying that they are married. If someone who's betrothed is unfaithful to the person they're betrothed to, they would be charged with adultery, for which they would then be penalty for being caught in adultery in the Old Testament from the law of Moses is you would be stoned to death. And so Joseph finds out that Mary is with child and he knows it's not his child. He's confronted with the situation that he needs to deal with, and his decision, it's a gentle one. He doesn't want to expose her to shame because he knows what would happen to her if he did, so he's just going to quietly divorce her and go his way. Then God sends an angel to intervene and tells him, this child is by the power of the Holy Spirit. Do not fear to take her as your wife. What's the key element at work in there that Joseph draws upon? The next one, if you bounce over into Luke's gospel, we know that just before Jesus' birth, there is a command that comes out from the Roman emperor, that all subjects need to go to the city of their ancestry to register for the census. Caesar's just not getting enough money to fund all of his lavish entertainments and parties, so it's like, let's make sure we get everybody to pay their fair share. So he has the census declared, and so Joseph is of the house of David, so they have to go to Bethlehem. They get there, and it's like Mary's due date is like right here, and they get to the city, and what do they have to deal with? There's not even a Motel 6 open with room for them to spend the night. They wind up having to go to a stable somewhere out in the field, and without any assistance whatsoever, Mary gives birth to Jesus with all the farm animals around and no crib, so she has to use a manger to lie the child in. What's the element that's needing to be at work around all of this? We see them on the eighth day after his birth. In fact, January 1st used to be the feast of the circumcision of the Lord until it got changed back at Vatican II to be Mary, Mother of God. But it was celebrating on the eighth day, the child would be circumcised, and that's the day that they would give the child's name. What are they doing? Now, there's something that's weaving all of these things together, and then go further. They find out that Herod, being a jealous tyrant and, to put it mildly, very despicable character, has found out that the Magi have deceived him, and gone back and not come back to tell them where he found Jesus at. So his decision was to do what? He sends his troops out with orders to kill every male child 2 years of age and under. And so Joseph is warned by another angel to take the child and the mother and head to Egypt. What's the element that's at work in here? At the presentation in the temple, this goes back to both Exodus and Leviticus, when a woman gives birth after a period of purification to go to the temple and offer a sacrifice. The normal one was a young lamb, but if it was a poor couple, they would offer two turtle doves, two pigeons, as a sacrifice, and then if the first child is a male child, they would then have to redeem it. Because normally, before the incident with the golden calf, the firstborn male would be the priest of the family and offer sacrifice for the family. But after that incident with the golden calf, that's when the priesthood changed to where they all, by mandate, came from the tribe of... Learning a little biblical history this morning. From the tribe of Levi. So Jesus is not of the tribe of Levi. He's of the tribe of... Oh my, he's from the tribe of Judah, of the house of David. So there's a sacrifice going on. You have to basically redeem the child back, and then someone from the tribe of Levi would take that person's service, except that's not what happens here, because Jesus is going to be the perfected fulfillment of the entire Old Testament priesthood, including the perfect high priest, because he's going to do what? He's going to offer himself as the perfect sacrifice. Priest and victim. That's woven into there. And then we've got this going on here as well. Imagine you're Joseph for a moment. You've got this old character coming up to you in the temple who's waxing eloquently about what a wonderful moment this is, and then turning away from you, turns to your wife and says, your child is destined to be the rise and the downfall of many, and a sword will pierce your heart. Not to them, just to her. Again, you know, imagine you're Joseph and you hear that. What does that just tell you? What does that tell you? At some point coming in the future, Joseph is not going to be there. Because the last time we hear of him is when? Anybody here pray the rosary? What's the fifth joyful mystery? Finding Jesus in the temple, they go to Jerusalem for the Passover, and, you know, as customary, men would go in a group together, the ladies would go in a group together, and the children would go whichever parent they wanted to, and Mary thinks Jesus is with Joseph, Joseph thinks Jesus is with Mary, and a couple of days out on the way back home, they discover he ain't with either one of them. And so they go back to Jerusalem, they find him in the temple. And did you not know I need to be in my father's house about my father's business? So what I'm trying to get you to see is, what's a common thread that is weaving how they handle all of these things together? They have a very active faith life. They are, you know, they are very profoundly Jewish. They're following the Mosaic law. They are participating in a lively faith practice with all of the Jewish festivals, Sabbath days. All of that is a consistent thread that is uniting everything that they encounter along the way. And it is that in which they are able to handle all of these strange things that are going on in their lives. That faith life is the key. That's where their holiness is coming from, is that they have a very lively and very consistent life of faith, and it is integrated into everything that we see happening with them and to them and through them. Their faith life is what matters most of all. It is that a very powerful, like steel cable thread that ties all of this together, and which is what enables them to handle all of these different things. Because ultimately, over the whole thing, there is a shadow cast over it. Anybody want to guess what the shadow is that's been shadowing over them from the very beginning? This. That one thing from Simeon's words that were directed solely to Mary, a sword will pierce your heart, is in direct reference connection to her being present at Jesus' crucifixion. What enabled her to go through all that? Faith life. Why am I trying to draw all of these things together, connected for you this morning? Think again, all the stuff that we know biblically of what they had to deal with, what they went through, all the experiences that were part of those years of Jesus' life that we have in the Gospels. What is it? Because it's the same thing that, I don't know about you, but has your family had anything happen go on in your life? Everything is nice and easy peasy? No struggles, no trials, no tribulations, nothing unexpected, no illnesses, no sudden surprises, no trials and tribulations? Anybody have a perfectly smooth life going on? I'd like to meet you and see what it's like. What is it that could do the same thing for us that we see it do for them? Again, their faith life is an integral part of their daily life, not just from Sabbath day to the next Sabbath day to the next Sabbath day, but woven all the way through all the days in between the Sabbath days and all the major festivals that they participate in. It's their faith life that is literally the key that enables them to be faith-filled and faithful. It's what enables Joseph to be a faithful father and husband. It is what enables Mary to be a faithful wife and mother. And obviously for Jesus, who never ceases to be the only begotten Son of God, to be faithful to them. Imagine your God and you're having to follow the fourth commandment. Honor your...
It wasn't one of the readings.
Honor your father and your mother. And he doesn't. Even though he's God. Can you imagine you've got this tiny little infant wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger full of hay with animals all around, and at the same time, you're exercising this power that is holding the entire universe in its existence. He never stops, ceases to be God. But even so, he's humble and obedient to Mary and Joseph and to the practices of their faith life. Again, what can enable us to handle anything that comes along in our life with the same stability and devotion, fearlessness that we see in Mary, Joseph, and Jesus? The same thing. Your faith life, my faith life, they need to be an integral part of every moment of every day of our lives until we reach the last day of our life and find ourselves standing before God. The power of a consistent, lively faith life will enable us, like it did them, to handle anything and everything without being blown away or destroyed by it. In fact, it will even, each thing that comes along will strengthen our faith life as we encounter how God's grace comes in and empowers us through whatever is going on. It will take our ordinary human families and transform them to be holy. I want to put it there one more time. I'm trying to get through, find a hole, pour it in. Let your faith life be as consistent and power-filled and grace-filled as theirs was. Let your family be holy. as theirs still is holy.